W. L. Craig, Professor Mackey and the Kalam Cosmological Argument. Craig's standard form presentation of the Kalam argument sets him up for a well-organized discussion of the issue. His proposal is that the universe has a cause of its existence. His opponent, Mackey, maintains the opposite, that the universe could be uncaused. Faced with Craig's argument, Mackey will have to explain which of Craig's premises he finds objectionable. Anticipating Mackey will focus his objection against premise 2, Craig proceeds to add 2 sub-arguments to support this premise, ending up with an 11-step argument. 1. Whatever begins to exist has a cause of its existence. 2. The universe began to exist. 2.1. Argument based on the impossibility of an actual infinite. 2.11. An actual infinite cannot exist. 2.12. An infinite temporal regress of events is an actual infinite. 2.13. Therefore, an infinite temporal regress of events cannot exist. 2.2. Argument based on the impossibility of the formation of an actual infinite by successive addition. 2.21. A collection formed by successive addition cannot be actually infinite. 2.22. The temporal series of past events is a collection formed by successive addition. 2.23. Therefore, the temporal series of past events cannot be actually infinite. 3. Therefore, the universe has a cause of its existence. Needless to say, there are a lot of technical concepts in these sub-arguments, which Craig will need to define and explain. We don't need to get into any of these details, however, to see that Craig's argument constitutes a formidable challenge to Mackey. A reader who was already familiar with the Kalam argument would no doubt welcome Craig's schematic presentation, since it captures the issue in such a clear and logical way. Would it be better if everyone always wrote schematically like Craig? Imagine a world in which politicians laid out their arguments in standard form. Perhaps we would have an easier time figuring out where they actually stand, but we would also never get a sense of their personalities, and we might just fall asleep before they'd finished. It's probably just as well that most authors don't schematize their arguments for us. This leaves us, the readers, with something to figure out. We have to read actively, thereby gaining the opportunity to interpret the author in our own way. Consider the following passage from Napoleon Hill's classic motivational book of the 1930s, Think and Grow Rich. Selling more than 30 million copies worldwide, this book is still today ranked in the top 10 on the Business Week bestseller list. It is completely different from the Craig passage in both style and content, yet it contains an argument just the same. The Mystery of Sex Transmutation, from Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. The emotion of sex brings into being a state of mind. Because of ignorance on the subject, this state of mind is generally associated with the physical, and because of improper influences, to which most people have been subjected in acquiring knowledge of sex, things essentially physical have highly biased the mind. The emotion of sex has back of it the possibility of 3 constructive potentialities. They are 1. The perpetuation of mankind. 2. The maintenance of health. As a therapeutic agency, it has no equal. 3. The transformation of mediocrity into genius through transmutation. Sex transmutation is simple and easily explained. It means the switching of the mind from thoughts of physical expression to thoughts of some other nature. Sex desire is the most powerful of human desires. When driven by this desire, men develop keenness of imagination, courage, willpower, persistence, and creative ability unknown to them at other times. So strong and impelling is the desire for sexual contact that men freely run the risk of life and reputation to indulge it. When harnessed and redirected along other lines, This motivating force maintains all of its attributes of keenness of imagination, courage, etc., which may be used as powerful creative forces in literature, art, or in any other profession or calling, including, of course, the accumulation of riches. The transmutation of sex energy calls for the exercise of willpower, to be sure, but the reward is worth the effort. The desire for sexual expression is inborn and natural. The desire cannot and should not be submerged or eliminated, but it should be given an outlet through forms of expression which enrich the body, mind, and spirit of man. If not given this form of outlet through transmutation, it will seek outlets through purely physical channels. A river may be dammed and its water controlled for a time, but eventually it will force an outlet. The same is true of the emotion of sex. It may be submerged and controlled for a time, but its very nature causes it to be ever seeking means of expression. If it is not transmuted into some creative effort, it will find a less worthy outlet. Although Hill's argument is somewhat rambling and repetitive, it is also colourful and interesting. What exactly is his proposal, and what are the reasons he is advancing in favour of it? In answering this question, the first thing to note is that the three numbered steps appearing in the third paragraph do not constitute an argument. They constitute a list. A list is nothing more than a set of items that fit a given description. An argument, in contrast, contains a proposal along with reasons that support it. Because there is no relationship of support among the items in Hill's numbered steps, we know it is a list rather than an argument. When looking for an argument, the best thing to do is start by asking yourself, what is this author trying to prove? This is to say, what is his or her main conclusion? Answering this question will involve some interpretation. One reader may legitimately come to a slightly different answer than another reader. This doesn't mean anything goes. For example, Hill certainly is not making a proposal about rivers. His point about rivers provides an illustration for his proposal. To think it is the proposal itself would be a misunderstanding. A definite proposal can be found in the second paragraph from the end when Hill writes, "The desire for sexual expression should be given an outlet through transmutation." Just as a river needs an outlet, so also does sexual desire, in Hill's view. Everything he says in the passage is designed to support this proposal, either directly or indirectly. Sexual transmutation is Hill's name for giving sexual desire a non-physical outlet in a profession or other creative calling. Hill is clearly proposing sexual transmutation. A proposal, however, is not by itself an argument. In order to create an argument, an author needs to advance reasons in favour of his proposal. What are Hill's reasons for proposing sexual transmutation? A proposal, however, is not by itself an argument. In order to create an argument, an author needs to advance reasons in favour of his proposal. What are Hill's reasons for proposing sexual transmutation? Hill devotes the longest paragraph of the passage to the claim that sexual desire is the most powerful human desire. Suppose we cast this claim as the first premise in his argument. Then we have the beginnings of a standard form. 1. Sexual desire is the most powerful human desire, which could lead to 3. Therefore, sexual desire should be given an outlet through transmutation. Setting aside Hill's passage for a moment, we should now ask ourselves the question, what would it take to connect step 1 with step 3? What is the logical bridge? What we are looking for here is something like the law of transitivity in mathematics, which is extremely important in formulating a good argument. The word transitive, which comes from the Latin word for going across, means that a relationship holds between the members of a sequence such that the middle member makes a bridge from the first member to the last. The following is the simplest example of transitivity. 1. X is Y. 2. Y is Z. 3. Therefore X is Z. The variable Y is the bridge between X and Z. If X is Y and Y is Z, then X must be Z. We can create transitive bridges with verbs other than is. For example, if Jake eats bacon and bacon contains sodium, then Jake eats sodium. But not all linking sequences are transitive. Just because Gary loves Mary and Mary loves Harry doesn't mean that Gary loves Harry. As you practice reading passages for arguments, you will learn to distinguish those sequences that are transitive from those that are not. The logic is transitive in the case at hand. We can only conclude that sexual desire should be given an outlet through transmutation if we know both that sexual desire is the most powerful human desire and that the most powerful human desire should be given an outlet through transmutation. We can therefore fill in the standard form as follows. 1. Sexual desire is the most powerful human desire. 2. The most powerful human desire should be given an outlet through transmutation. 3. Therefore, sexual desire should be given an outlet through transmutation. This is a transitive sequence of reasoning. Sure enough, if we go back now to look at the passage, we see that although Hill never states premise 2 explicitly, he is concerned to establish this step. He tells us that if a powerful desire does not have an outlet, then it will eventually force itself out in less worthy expressions, and that if it does have an outlet, then it will produce great things. In other words, Hill is presenting two sub-arguments for premise 2, much the way Craig did in his passage. So we could further expand our schema as follows. 1. Sexual desire is the most powerful human desire. 2. The most powerful human desire should be given an outlet through transmutation. 2.1. If it isn't given an outlet, then it will force itself in less worthy ways. 2.2. If it is given an outlet, then it will produce great things. 3. Therefore, sexual desire should be given an outlet through transmutation. We can now see why Hill thinks we should accept premise 2. As it stands, however, this standard form gives us no reason for accepting steps 2.1 or step 2.2. Hill provides the needed support for these steps through his comparison to the river. We can elaborate this comparison beyond what he actually says in order to fill out the two sub-arguments. 1. Sexual desire is the most powerful human desire. 2. The most powerful human desire should be given an outlet through transmutation. 2.1. If it isn't given an outlet, then it will force itself in less worthy ways. 2.11. If a river isn't given an outlet, it bursts through the dam. 2.12. If a river bursts through the dam, then it causes damage. 2.13. Therefore, if a river isn't given an outlet, then it causes damage. 2.2. If it is given an outlet, then it will produce great things. 2.21. If a river is given an outlet, then its energy can be harnessed. 2.22. If a river's energy can be harnessed, then it can generate electricity for many people to use. 2.23. Therefore, if a river is given an outlet, then it can generate electricity for many people to use. 3. Therefore, sexual desire should be given an outlet through transmutation. Notice the transitive structure of the two sub-arguments. They can be taken to provide support for premise 2 of the main argument, provided one's strongest desire is just like a river, as Hill claims. Now we have a full account of Hill's argument. We know exactly what his proposal is, and we understand the reasons he advances in favor of it. He took a little bit of work. We had to eliminate some elements of the passage that weren't relevant and supply other elements that were missing. Hill could have saved us a lot of trouble by presenting his argument schematically in the first place, as did Craig. But would Hill have sold 30 million copies of his book if it were full of standard form arguments? Probably not. First of all, It wouldn't be as much fun to read that way. Second, and more importantly, it would make him too vulnerable to criticism. In fact, the big payoff for wrestling an argument into standard form is that it puts the reader in a strong position to evaluate it. We now know Hill's argument crucially hinges on the claim that sexual desire should be given an outlet through transmutation because it is just like a river. How convincing is this claim? According to the analogy, allowing sexual desire to be expressed physically would be equivalent to allowing a river to flow naturally. Meanwhile, transmuting sexual desire into a profession or other creative calling would be equivalent to damming the river and diverting its flow to generate electricity for many people to use. Hill thinks it's obvious that generating electricity is better than letting the river flow naturally. But there is plenty of room here to disagree. For example, some environmentalists insist that interrupting the natural flow of a river is deeply and irreparably harmful to the surrounding wildlife over time. Likewise, a critic of Hill might insist that transmuting sexual desire into a profession or other creative calling is deeply and irreparably harmful to the body over time. Recall that in his third paragraph, Hill himself states that sex has no equal as a therapeutic agency for the maintenance of health.